A very good morning to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you very much. Now, Kobo both manufactures the readers themselves, has an online store for people to buy ebooks as well. Are we saying goodbye to books?
It doesn't seem to be the case. So when ebooks first came on the scene, and I'm kind of going back to 2009, 2010, there was this sense among authors, among publishers, even among readers, that maybe this was going to be the way that it was for music, the way that it was for video, and that, you know, ebooks would come and sort of displace paper altogether. But it doesn't seem to be the case. It turns out print's quite durable, and ebooks and print books have found a way to coexist.
And is it a healthy synergy? I mean, do you think that the publishing industry has kind of benefited from this?
It does seem to be. I think unlike both music and movies, publishers were much better able to adapt to this digital transition. So you don't see publishers going out of business. You don't see, you know, sort of this massive upheaval that happened in the music business, for example. And instead, they got ebooks out there early. They made them available very quickly. Piracy didn't seem to become a major issue in ebooks the way that it has in music. And that allowed ebooks to just become another way that books get sold.
Now, that's an interesting one to me. Why do you think it's been resistant to piracy when nothing else has? And I mean nothing else.
I think there are a couple of reasons. One, you know, it's really easy to rip a CD. It's surprisingly hard to rip a book. but also, I think that book publishers looked at the experience of music and video and said, you know, let's learn from that. So they tried to make as many ebooks available as possible as quickly as possible. So they didn't try to choke off supply. Prices tend to be significantly lower than they are in print. So people felt that they were getting a savings if they bought them legitimately, as opposed to trying to find a way to get them illegitimately. And then players like, you know, us and some of our competitors got on the scenes early and made it really easy to find them and buy them. And do that within ecosystems that allowed, you know, for example, to read on an e-reader, but also on a, you know, on a smartphone or on a tablet, and have that be a really convenient way to consume them. And that combination of factors seems to have allowed the book industry to have escaped that Napster moment.
I kind of get the feeling that the e-reader industry worked with publishers on a much deeper level than nearly any other industry has. So rather it being a great disruptor that was confusing to the people producing this stuff, it seemed like it was a very natural progression for them.
Seems to have been. And at the same time, we've been able to use this new form of digital distribution that exists to bring other players into the space that previously didn't have a way to get their work out. So we see this great rise in self-publishing, for example, where, you know, for us, through our self-publishing service, Kobo Writing Life, we have thousands and thousands of authors who previously couldn't get access to traditional publishing, have, in some cases, really great books that are getting big audiences. They're building careers themselves outside of traditional publishing. And it now represents like 10 to 15% of all of the books that we sell. So it's like a whole other player in publishing that's now arisen that didn't exist before.
That's quite amazing. It's almost the kind of a YouTube phenomenon of people sort of becoming their own video stars off their own bat.
Well, and even more than that, you know, imagine YouTube is if people actually got paid. And that's what's happening here. We see people with real careers coming out of self-publishing because they're able to access us and some of these other e-reading players.
In terms of the hardware, I was an early adopter. I jumped over to e-readers very, very quickly. Do you think there's a lot of understanding of what they can do? Do you think there's some sort of a kickback from maybe older people who might be big readers, but they're scared that there could be something confusing about an e-reader?
Well, so this is the fascinating part. Unlike music and unlike video, the most avid adopters of e-readers, you know, aren't in their teens or 20s or 30s. They're actually in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. So, you know, which stands to reason. I mean, those are also the people that come into regular bookstores and buy the most books are sort of people in their, you know, late 30s into their 40s and 50s. So that's the demographic that powers reading generally. And they were the ones to say, hey, you know, I read two or three books a week. All of the things that make e-reading interesting become really compelling to me. The ability to buy things instantly, the ability to carry all of your books around with you wherever you go, are great if you're the kind of person who reads like 25, 30 books a year. So it's the first digital revolution that isn't being powered by 18 to 25-year-olds. It's being powered by 40 to 60-year-olds.
What a relief. I feel much better about myself now all of a sudden. Look, when tablets started getting very popular, people thought that they would cannibalize a lot of that e-reader market. Now, I prefer the e-ink technology. I like sort of reading on a non-backlit screen. But have you seen a bit of a fall in actual hardware sales?
What we see now is this equilibrium between people reading on smartphones and tablets. And you know, at Kobo, we have this great app ecosystem as well. But then also people who elect to read on e-readers. And that e-reader market has become very stable for us, partly because we keep pushing the technology better. So, you know, we're just rolling out in Australia this week our new Kobo Aura 1. So with that one, we've made the screen larger. We've made it waterproof so that you can take it with you in the bath or to the beach. We have done things with front lights so that it eliminates blue spectrum at night, so it doesn't keep you up the way that a smartphone or a tablet can at the end of the day. So all of these things that kind of push the barriers of what an e-reader can be, and then getting them into retail stores so people can pick them up and go, oh yeah, this actually feels okay. This looks okay. I can imagine myself using that. And just getting people to try it for the first time is kind of the first big hurdle.
And just quickly, the question everyone hates getting asked, what's next?
It's when we started designing this one, just to kind of give you a sense of how we go about this stuff, we brought in some of our most avid frequent readers. So we went and found people who read 2 books a week, 3 books a week. We sat them in a room with our industrial designers and said, you know, what do you think the ultimate reading experience could look like? And they told us, you know, they were the ones who said, make screens bigger, you know, make it waterproof, and all of this other stuff. So when we start thinking, okay, you know, what should the next one be? You know, we start bringing readers back together again and saying, so what's something that's holding you back from reading digitally, or what's holding you back from reading more? And they tell us, and that becomes the you know, the next generation of product.
Oh, my God, crowdsourcing the ideas from the people actually doing the reading.
It turns out if you ask people what they want, they'll generally tell you.
Michael, thank you very much for coming in and talking about this with Breakfast.
Thanks so much for having me.